Today on The Breakdown, Espen Jorstad, World Series of Poker main event champion, in fact, Espen Jorstad, is going to be at the final table of a $200,000 buy-in event against Chris Brewer, who's been making noise lately about poker with his play. And I'm not even sure openings are necessary anymore. Why are we doing this? Why can't we just start? Where's the value, Grant? What is this just a waste of everyone's time right now? Are people sitting, listening, frustrated now? I think they might be. They might be. And you never know what you're going to get. It's a box of chocolates on The Breakdown. With Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
We'll never abandon those opens, the cold opens before the music. But to many of your sadness, we are going to stop doing as much before the hand. Now, there's good news.
It's not sadness, really. They just don't know yet.
Yeah, they're sad for this moment. That's what I mean.
It's going to change really fast.
Yeah, so we're not going to mess around and talk about whatever for the next 20 minutes.
Chad McVean. Eventually.
Yeah, no, we're not going to do that, and that's no longer going to be part of what we do on this podcast, but that's because we're putting it somewhere else. Don't worry. We have started an entirely new podcast. It's called Just Go With It. Now, this is true. I'm not making this up.
Right.
Just Go With It, and it's just Jonathan and I talking about shit like we used to at the beginning of these podcasts.
Yeah.
So if that is for you, and I think it is...
A lot of you.
For lots of you, then go ahead and check that out. It's on all the podcast apps. There's a few things called Just Go With It. It's the one that's black and white and simple. It just says Just Go With It.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. There's only two Just Go With It podcasts that have new episodes coming out. We're one of the two, and we're not the one about post-grad life.
Yeah.
So it'll be fine. Also, hopefully we're the entertaining great one. So if you like the openings at all, if you enjoy that, you should really check this out because this is a... I would say it's a different but probably better version of that.
I agree. Yeah. It's intentionally formatless, and we just have a lot of fun with it.
Yes. And it's us talking about things that interest us and also, you know, going off on weird bit tangents type things as we are wont to do anyway. We give ourselves all the room in the world and put that sort of in its own place, which we think is probably where it actually belongs, not at the beginning of just a sort of random poker podcast that has nothing to do with the bits, which is what we've been doing.
So those who didn't care for the openings and just wanted the poker analysis, you may rejoice. That is now going to be what these podcasts are. If you want to find Just Go With It, just go find it. It's on any of your podcasts. There's at least one episode out by the time this is coming out, and maybe up to three episodes are on there.
Just go find with it if you want to listen to that.
All right. So that's that.
Okay.
Check out that podcast.
Yeah. Oh, you really, at least check it out. We like it.
Yeah.
We really like it.
We had a lot of fun.
Grant, I'm going to tell one quick story about it. Grant was saying, let's do a formatless podcast. And I was like, really? And he said, just humor me. Those are literally the words he said. And I was like, fine, we'll try it once. And we just recorded what is now the first episode. And as soon as it ended, I said, okay, that was good. That was really good.
Yeah.
So we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Check it out.
Check it out. You know, if you like it, share it with your fucking friends.
With your damn friends. Do it, even if your friends are bad people, we don't care.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, so this hand that we're going to talk about, this was suggested by Ty Dog.
Ty Dog!
Ty Dog is in the house. I always feel like talking like that when Ty Dog suggests
Who let the Ty Dog out? Ty Dog's out.
I think Ty Dog let the Ty Dog out. Isn't that interesting how that works?
Who?
Yeah, and we also got... another one, Spirit Airlines, who's been kind of...
With a Z?
Yeah, kind of killing it recently.
Yeah.
Those are the suggestors of this hand.
Hate those bag fees, though.
You know what? But if the airline is going to suggest hands, then I'll accept that everybody hates them as an airline.
They are bringing content.
They're now our airline, you know? It's kind of like Chris Jones, right? It's our Chris Jones.
Only we can beat up on Chris Jones and tell say how awful he is to the world.
Chris Jones.
Okay.
Anyway. We're in the Triton 200K, and the Triton fields are just getting bigger these days. I mean, they have re-entries and stuff, but they always did. And we have 81 players in a 200K buy-in.
Yeah,
I feel like that's new, you know, to have that many players.
I haven't done the research, probably not going to, but 51 entries, 30 re-entries. as you said, $200,000+$12,000 event. First place, over $3 million. Actually, yes, over $3
million. Are they raking $12,000 a person?
Yep, 6% they're taking.
Damn, I would have guessed that it would be a lot less when you get to those heights of buy-in. You know, like I would think maybe 1% after you get to 100K.
My best guess is the Triton is really built for the very rich Macau boys type folks. And all these players are getting put in. And so there's no reason not to rake it, basically, is the thought. I'm just making that up, but it makes sense to me. This is all Paul Fua's tour anyway, you know. This is his thing.
Yeah, so I mean...
he's making bank!
It's like almost $1 million
yes,
in rake.
For almost $1 million.
For this event.
Just this event, which had 51 entries, 51 players and 80 total entries and probably took 4 days.
I mean, hot damn, if you can pull this off.
He's pulling it off.
Like, you don't have to have the scale of the World Series of Poker if you can rake $12,000 per entry.
You're doing amazing.
And it's
well.
So much easier to run. You just need like 8 dealers. It's like,
also, you're doing a series, right? So it isn't just this. It's like 12 events or something, you know, 15 events. So I would guess they're pulling something like, you know, $20 million out of this because there's some bigger buy-ins than this too. Maybe 20 is a little high, 15. And after expenses and everything, you got to be clearing $5 million. Easy. Easy.
I mean, what a great deal.
Plus they got, you know, plus they're putting it on their YouTube channel. There's all these other, I mean, this is good.
Yeah.
This is really good.
I cannot believe the players accept a $12,000 rake on a $200,000 buy-in.
I think, again, most of the players are not paying anyway, so it's all the same to them. And as long as their backers don't care, which I guess they don't.
I mean, I guess.
It counts against makeup, though.
The ecosystem really works well, though, for charging this rake, because if the whales don't care, and there's enough whales that it attracts all of the sharks.
Right.
The sharks are going to be like, well, I just have to fucking pay it.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter. I have to pay it.
It's like when you do the dealer appreciation thing. It's like, this is stupid, but 100% of the time I have to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Get more chips. I have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, great job business-wise. As a player, I would be pretty annoyed to pay $12,000 in rake for one
I would hope as a player, if you were attending this event, you would already know about the rake, though, and you've decided to either pay it or gotten over it yourself and moved on.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just shocking to me. I would just really expect them to really diminish the percentage after $10,000.
I agree. And in fact, it makes me want to look up what else they're doing, you know, in terms of rakes for this, even their bigger stuff. And in fact, I might just do that now. It's $200,000 is not their biggest event, but it's their second biggest one. They had a $250,000, and that was it. But it's all the $250,000 is 12.5, so they dropped down a percentage point. That was in London, though. They're just like taking 5 to 6% in rake consistently as
that
I'm looking over this.
Nuts, man! It's more than a main event buy-in in rake.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's 20 main event buy-ins and buy-in. In fairness,
still,
just saying.
Still, it's. So
the main event takes more rake than these guys do.
Main event takes what, 600?
800.
Are you sure?
They used to. I assume they haven't. I can't imagine they would have lowered it. So, yeah, it used to be a solid 8%.
Maybe once you factor in the 3% of the dealers or something like that?
No, I think they take 800 out right away for themselves.
For some reason, that 600 hits my head. It hits me right in the head.
I can try and look it up while you talk about what's going on in the hand if you want.
Okay, so we have 8 remaining out of the 81 entries who all gave Paul Fua all of their money in rake, and 13 got paid. So we're in the midpoint of the money at this small field tournament. So that means that the ICM considerations are not going to be huge at the moment that we're talking about with 8 remaining. The pay jump from 8th to 7th is $200,000, which is one buy-in. So there's not going to be huge decision points based on ICM.
And we do have an update on that main event thing.
Okay.
I was just straight wrong.
Cool.
About it. So it's a total of 7% is taken, 2.1% for dealers and staff, 4.9% of the buy-in is withheld for entry fees. I don't know where I got that $800 from.
Neither do I.
I've been believing that for years and years.
You were very certain.
I really was, but incorrect. So $700 is coming out of every entry, though, to pay for things. Anyway, go on.
Interesting epistemological situation for you there. You can never have true knowledge if you want more like that. Check out the other podcast. Anyway.
Why would anyone want more like that?
Yeah, that was maybe the least fun part.
Oh, my God.
The other podcast. Anyway, way to shit all over the thing, I said. 30K, 60K are the blinds. Chris Brewer, who has just been on a run. You know, he's not on like a Adamo or Greenwood type run even. Like Greenwood was probably the most minor of the the elite runs, right? Of the like five players who had elite runs.
But it was pretty good too.
Let's quickly recap who those players were. Dan Coleman was the first one.
Federholtz.
Bonomo at one point.
Bonomo, Greenwood.
And Adamo.
There you go.
I think that's all.
I think it
the
is.
Major runs of like
winning. I mean, Eric Seidel was the first one, actually.
So I would say that of those, Greenwood was the most minor run.
Yeah, if not Seidel.
Yeah. And Holtz might be the biggest one, most impact, as far as like how much people were talking about it and stuff.
I mean, I don't know. At the time, like Coleman was such a big deal.
Yeah, Adamo
too. Federholtz has probably maintained his place in the firmament better than anyone else.
Bonomo.
True. Bonomo was already there.
Yeah.
And so it feels like Bonomo like solidified himself in people's minds, but like Federer and Adamo and Dan Coleman came kind of felt like out of nowhere. Maybe not to these players, but from our point of view, right?
Adamo for sure felt out of nowhere.
Yeah. Coleman too.
Yeah.
And Federer too.
Yeah.
I would say it's Federer, but I don't really know what I'm talking about.
Anyway, I don't think Brewer rises to that level right now, but he's been doing very well in a lot of these events. And he won two bracelets in this past summer, 2023.
That is correct. He won a Deuce of Seven No Limit single draw bracelet for $368,000.
It's a notoriously sharky, difficult field.
Yeah, but small field.
Yeah.
And then he also won the $250,000 buy-in super high roller shot clock event for $5.3 million.
That's pretty good.
That was the big one. That's like his breakthrough moment, really, that he's been like waiting for, it seems like, forever. He finally really got it.
Like, that's a pretty serious ROI.
Yeah.
250 to 5.3.
Yeah, not two shabs. I mean, it's 21 buy-ins.
Yeah, but for high rollers of that magnitude, usually you're not seeing ROIs that high. It's just because there's so many people concentrated in Vegas at that time.
Truth. He's also had a pretty good Triton series. Where he finished second in the 25K for $600,000. I guess after this event, he's going to cash in three other Triton events.
And we know he's cashing in this one.
Yep, he's already cashed in this one as well. He's locked up at least eighth place money. So, yeah, he's got five cashes in this Triton event. And there's, I think, 16 total events or so. So it's pretty good. So he's doing well.
Yep.
He's on. And he's playing very well, too. He made a fold at that 250K final table, or I think he folded jacks for, was it queens? I think it was jacks. But he folded jacks to basically like where like he opened, it was raised, someone called four bet and just folded the jacks, which on one level, sure. On another level, these are the guys who are going to be more balanced and have more bluffs than anyone else. I think they were like five-handed or six-handed at the final table. Folded it correctly and ended up winning the thing. Hmm. That was pretty cool. And here we are with this hand, which is like going to be cool too. I'll just say that.
All right. Well, he's going to be under the gun at 30K, 60K with 40 bigs, 2.4 million, and King 10 of clubs. And he opens to 150. The old 2.5X is back.
I love it.
It's back, baby.
I support it.
I do, too. I've been 2.5Xing in tournaments pretty frequently, especially at 40 blinds or more. I wonder if he would do this if he had 1.8 million or if he would open smaller.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Either way, he opens to 150 under the gun with King 10 of clubs, eight-handed.
Admirable.
Feels like the bottom of his range, pretty much.
Yeah, unless he's opening some suited connectors. He might be opening like 9-8 of clubs.
Yeah, he might be.
But that's it.
Yeah. Then we got another guy who is having a pretty good recent history in poker.
Yes.
And that's Mr. Espen Jorstad. Espen Jorstad.
Yes.
Who won the main event in 2022.
He did for $10 million.
Yeah, but that's less than Daniel Weinmann got, so he probably feels like a piece of crap.
Well, he is a piece of crap.
Well, yeah.
I mean, just because of this.
Because, Weinmann is now not a piece of crap, and Jorstad is a piece
Jorstad of crap. Jorstad wasn't, and then is now, because Weinmann won.
Yeah, so if it's bigger next year, Weinmann's a piece of crap.
But how could it be bigger? Weinmann won 12.1
Unless
million.
Weinmann wins again.
Exactly. Yeah. See? You say, how could that happen? Hello, Mark Newhouse.
Yeah.
Ever in your life?
Ninth twice in a row. How about that?
After he tweeted not getting fucking ninth again.
I still cannot believe that's real life.
It is real life.
That really, really happened.
Actually happened.
The likelihood that somebody could get ninth in the main event 2 years in a row at all is amazing.
Insane.
And then on top of it, to have tweeted that before the event began the second year.
It's really spectacular.
Yeah. It's quite a thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. Jorstad has the chip lead in the tournament with 3.4 million. So doing quite well here with 3.4 million.
57 blinds or something.
Yep. And he's got two jacks, jack of spades, jack of hearts. And you can see already, by the way, with eight-handed that The Triton does not structure their high rollers as deeply as the World Series structures their like named events, right? Like even stuff like the Monster Tech and Millionaire Maker, 56 blinds would not be the chip lead with eight remaining.
Right.
You know, and this is kind of part of a debate that's going on in poker. Like all of the pros who get high volume want events to be faster, and many amateurs do not, mm-hmm. right? Even though that's benefits the pros as far as how likely they are to win the event when it's slower, it hurts their hourly. And it benefits the amateurs when the events are faster because there's more variance.
Yeah.
But they want to get their money's worth.
Right.
So it's an interesting debate how like they both kind of have strange, different incentives and reasons for their...
Are there really that many pros who, when they get to a final table, don't want it to be deep?
It's not about... Odd. No, I mean, I think any pro would want it to be deep once they reach the final table. They just don't want an event to take 4 or 5 days. So...
Oh, because you're saying, yeah, like if it was the whole structure, there's an impact on the entire tournament, not just at the end.
Yeah.
Right, I see.
Yeah.
Got it.
Of course, yeah. This is a big thing that Angela Jorgensen was bringing up this summer, friend of the podcast and good pro, about like she was fighting against like Daniel Negreanu and all the other pros who were trying to get the World Series to speed up all of their structures.
Oh.
And the World Series effectively has sped up all of their structures that are not the named events, you know, like the Monster Stack and the Millionaire Maker and all that stuff is safe and like still the really good structures. But the normal 1500s are now 40 minute day one levels, stuff like that. And it's all kind of because of Negreanu and his campaigning to make things faster for his like player of the year chasing shit.
I can see why it really benefits Negreanu to have 40-minute levels in those spots, like versus an hour, right? Like, because if he's going to play every tournament or wants the ability to play every tournament, this really gives him a better chance to sure to get off the pot on each individual one, right?
And removing myself from the pro amateur debate, and just as like a fan of the idea of the World Series of Poker, I do not like that.
No, me either.
I like the idea that the World Series of Poker has great structures, and you go there, you pay your $1,500, and you get this fantastic worldwide beloved structure.
Mm-hmm. You know, but one of the things we always talk about when we're playing these events to each other, even is like, you know, we just have a lot of time. There's no need to force anything. I mean, the main event even more so, right? It's like, it's 2 hour levels. I mean, my God, we have all the time in the world. You know, like you just can take your time and pick people off and find the right spots. And they're eventually going to show up most of the time. Once in a while, they won't, sure. And sometimes you get cooler, but it gives you all the opportunity to really find your spots.
Yep, it does. So it's a little sad. And I think I'm on Angela's side with this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Anyway. In the Triton, I have no problem with them doing the structure however they want because I'm never going to play this shit.
I mean,
shit.
They're charging $12,000, right? They can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, they sure can. So Jorstad, with the chip lead, $3.4 million at $60,000, has two jacks, and he's plus two. How do you like to play this?
A mixture of calls and raises. I think mostly we're raising, but certainly not all the time against under the gun. And when we're plus two, raising may be a little too strong sometimes. Like a lot of players, at least in the old days, would just be flatting their entire plus one range when under the gun opens as a way to disguise their stronger hands versus their weaker hands. This is not too dissimilar to that as we're plus two. Also, jacks, I don't know what jacks really want to do. Do jacks want to get it in for 40 blinds against Brewer? But can we fold if he puts, like, this is a reason to call instead, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can three bet fold.
You can, but it really sucks to do that with a hand that's value heavy as jacks, right?
It does.
Like that's not the hand you really want to be three bet folding.
But you don't want that hand to be easily removed entirely from your range.
And right.
A person like Brewer is somebody you're going to have to be balanced against if you're going to be playing these events.
Yeah, that's why I think a mixture is really the right move. And the question is like, how much? I guess part of it also depends on who's behind us. If we've got squeezers behind us with smaller ish stacks, like 20 blind stacks. I'm more inclined to call more
and
to set up
see,
the
see what Brewer does, and if he ships over the top, we can fold, and sometimes we will have had the best hand, but so be it.
That's fine.
We
he has lost two King blinds. Sometimes. Yeah,
whatever.
But a lot of the time, we can pick off that really sweet squeeze play, and also we might avoid any trouble because Brewer moves in behind us. He has aces, kings, and queens a lot. We get to fold. We get to avoid putting any more than two blinds in when he has those hands, and we're only flipping against ace king anyway. If we're even calling the four bet shove that he's often going to be doing with ace king, right?
Right. I mean, in the tournaments that we play, you know, the 500, 1K, whatever. Buy-in tournaments, I would almost never three-bet jacks in this scenario against most players, unless it was like Rigby sitting at my table, you know, who I'm just trying to get it in with a hand that's clearly ahead of his range.
Well, this is where you're also deep enough where you're like, I don't want to play a really big pot here, right? You're trying to manage your stack as well and like look for a really good opportunity to either flop a set or flop the overpair and control the pot. You're doing a lot of things all at once here, right?
Yep. And of course, it gets tricky post-flop a lot of the time, but that's poker. That's fun, baby. Let's have some fun with some jacks, you know?
Yep.
That's what Jorstad does. He calls.
Okay.
Everybody else folds.
Cool. This is a good spot for both players, really.
Yeah.
I mean, better for Jorstad.
Yeah, he has a better hand. He has a better hand, yeah. And he has more chips, and he won the main event. So.
Yep. If you're a brewer, what are we putting Jorstad on?
I think he has a decent amount of pocket pairs that are like sevens through jacks, maybe even some queens, aces, and kings.
A little bit.
Sometimes. I don't know why I said queens, aces, and kings in that order, but I did.
It's great.
It's done. It can't be undone. It's like the last order you would ever say it in, but that's what I did. He has some, you know, ace 10 suited type hands, I would think.
Up to ace queen suited, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe, obviously a little bit of ace king, but probably very little.
Probably some queen jack suited, king queen suited. I think he's folding.
Suited Broadway.
King queen off, he's probably folding.
Yeah. Suited Broadway makes sense. Probably all the suited Broadway.
I don't know if he's calling queen 10 and king 10 suited. Maybe.
I guess I don't know. I think it's possible when he's the chip leader. And
yeah, but when Brewer opens under the gun and there's a lot of players behind, maybe he folds those hands.
Maybe.
I'm not sure if he has hands like ace wheel suited, if he's going to flat those, or if he's always three betting if he's entering the pot with those.
Yeah, I don't know either. But we may be too shallow to flat with them.
Yeah. You think too shallow to flat with hands like 7, 8, 8, 9 suited as well, 9, 10?
I mean, Jack I think 10. So when we're this early position too. If we're on the button, it's different, right?
Yeah.
But we're inviting the button to play. We're inviting the big blind to play. And I think we're probably not playing those hands as a call anyway. We might three bet them, but I don't think we're calling them.
Yeah.
At this stack depth. Maybe Espen would have a different answer here.
I would mostly be putting him on pocket pairs.
That'd yeah, like I think like pocket eights is like a perfect kind of hand, representative hand of this range. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it feels like.
I mean, king, queen suited, of course, but pocket eights.
If you want to feel representative of your own range, check out Nitro Betting. You
know? Or go to the doctor?
Well, you could do both.
You better call it.
Here's
doctor.
The thing about Nitro Betting.
Yeah.
It's not a place that you have to go physically. It's an internet situation.
Right, right.
And there's a link to it in the description of this podcast. So guess what you could do? You could hop in that car of yours or take the train or the bus or whatever you do, ride your bicycle, straight down to your local physician. Mm-hmm. All right? You get in that waiting room, pop out that smartphone, baby. Nitro Betting time. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. We get it on.
You're like, yo, Dr. Jones, you got Wi-Fi up in here? I don't want to use my data.
I like that.
It's Nitro Betting time. I have a troublesome mole, but I also have pocket aces. Nitro Betting at the doctor. It's just one of the many places you could play.
But really the best place,
well,
clearly.
Let's name some other places you could play on Nitro Betting.
Safari.
Yeah, assuming you have internet access and you're not being eaten by an animal.
The zoo.
Is this all just...
No.
Okay.
Just the next thing I said.
I wonder if the next one's going to be animal related.
It's not going to be
now,
animal related.
Now it's not. Now it's not. I've
it's
affected
definitely
you.
Not. It's definitely not.
All right, where's the next place?
In a car in the jungle. But, so what is that, buddy?
It depends. Are there,
at the dog groomers.
Are there bugs in the car?
Oh, are bugs animals now?
I don't think
they are.
They're not?
I don't know. Well, how would I know? This is the other podcast. This is just go with it.
It's the ad. It's fine.
Okay.
We're allowed to do whatever we want in the ads.
Oh,
so
right.
Ad is a safe space, okay? We can do whatever we want. And the answer we were looking for was grocery store.
Yes.
Of course, especially if you're shopping on like a Sunday afternoon, because you shouldn't do that. That's when everybody shops at the grocery store. But if you are and you're in the line, guess what time it is?
Nitro
betting time.
You gotta
use
do
the
it.
Link in the description. You get cool promotions and stuff.
Hey, can I read very quickly a review from the Apple Podcast app about the Breakdown Poker Podcast with the Poker Guys?
Sure.
It's quick.
Does this have to do with Nitro betting?
It does.
Okay. Oh, Jonathan's going to sneeze.
Okay, here we go.
Always good to sneeze on a podcast.
It's the headline is, could easily be great. This is about our podcast.
I think that's wonderful.
The analysis and insights about matters both on and off the felt are top notch. My only complaint is that the ads for Nitro are not only too long, their length is inconsistent. So if you want to fast forward through them, and who doesn't, it's a little tricky. Hey, you're putting it together, aren't you, buddy? Not so easy, is it?
Well... too bad for you.
But I like that they like the rest of it, you know? So, you know, hit the 30-second button if you really don't want to listen to. By the way, what many people are calling the best part of the podcast.
Right. This is well researched that the demographics all say this.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the hand.
Yep.
We're back. We're serious analysis mode. No more doctor jokes, okay?
Okay.
450K in the pot. 8, 9, jack, all clubs. Let's recap what the players have, shall
please,
we?
Please.
Espen Jorstad has two jacks, so he's got top set. Chris Brewer has king 10 of clubs, so he has the second nuts with an open-ended straight flush draw.
Yeah. So that's a monster.
This is a cooler zone.
Yeah, I mean, you would think at this depth, I mean, Brewer started the hand with, he's got, what, 38 blinds right now, right? Or 27, whatever, 37 and a half. Like, they're supposed to get it all in a lot and maybe right away. Like, it's not unreasonable.
So let's look at this through the lens of Chris Brewer maybe being among the top five right now at playing against elite competition. Really understanding how to play elite competition.
Great.
He checks as the preflop aggressor.
Yeah.
All right, so discuss.
He's going to have a lot of checks on this board.
Yeah, right? He's got to have a flush-related bet comfortably, right?
How many flushes does he have? He has ace-queen suited.
Ace-10 suited, probably.
Maybe.
He has king-10 suited. I mean, so
okay,
he's got
sure. And he can have other ace-x suiteds.
Yeah.
But he can't just bet all his flushes and nothing else, so now he's also betting his ace, just his naked ace of clubs.
Did you remove ace-king of clubs from his range because,
I did.
Because he has the king of clubs?
Oh, I did. You're right, I did. Yeah, so obviously ace-king of clubs is there, too. You're right. That is what I did. It's because the jack was on there. I wanted to make sure I didn't say ace-jack of clubs, and I somehow turned that into ace-king of clubs in my head. Anyway, so he's also got ace-x suiteds, and he's going to be betting a lot of his naked ace of clubs. But he has ace-king and ace-queen, and that's maybe ace-jack, but I don't think so. Probably not ace-jack off, even. So that's it. So he doesn't have that many bluffs.
Yeah.
He can bet some sets if he wants, but he's got to have a bunch of checks too with some value because a lot of his range is going to be checks here. Right?
He can bet any 10 of clubs he has, which is really just when he already has a flush or 10s with a 10 of clubs.
All of his 10 of clubs that he has pretty much are going to be made hands, so he doesn't need to bet it though.
Right? Yeah.
So he could, but he also really doesn't have to.
Of those hands, I think 10s with a 10 of clubs wants to bet the most because it values the equity denial the most.
Interesting. Okay, fair enough. I mean, I got no problem with that. I'm cool with that.
So do you think he should just never bet this board? Because it seems like that is likely Brewer's conclusion because he doesn't even have the nut flush, right? Like, if you're going to want to check some flushes here, it feels like the nut flush is clearly the most comfortable flush to check because you don't have to worry about, you know, ace-queen off with the ace of clubs getting there against you.
Well, there isn't too much naked ace of clubs out there in Espen Jorstad's range, is there?
Ace-queen off with the ace
of
clubs.
That's the only one.
Maybe ace-king.
I guess a little bit of ace-king, fine. But that's it, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. And ace-king is probably not there very often. And ace-queen may be a lot of three bets, too, for all we know, right?
Might be.
So we might just feel like he doesn't really have it. There's almost nothing to protect against. If I bet, he's going to run scurrying to the hills a lot of the time. I love to give him a chance to start, you know, bluffing or protecting his equity or whatever he thinks he's doing.
Well, the thing that kind of, maybe not from a balance perspective, but from the perspective of ranging your set preflop, the thing that makes me want to bet is that a lot of the time your set hit a set here, right? We got nine combos of sets that are squarely in his range on this board. He also has tens in his range, which he obviously would not fold yet.
If he has a set, though, like he's probably going to bet anyway, right?
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
So, like, I don't know if there's too much to be worried about there if he has a set. If he has under pairs, if he has like two sixes, he might decide to bet just to protect his equity. But if we bet, he might fold, kind of a thing. I don't know. I think. Clearly, we need to be somewhat mixed in general with our flushes versus non-flushes, but we don't want to just bet all our strong hands, and this is a reasonable candidate to decide to check call some of the time. I understand what you're saying, but the nut flush feels like an even better one.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but maybe Brewer also with the nut flush wants to put money in because sometimes he's coolered someone to the point where...
Because then your set has king-queen of clubs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this way, he gets to like always get all the money.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh no, the board paired and everything slowed down, or another club came and slowed everything down. Like, you want to start putting money in right away. Maybe he's thinking. I don't know if that's true, but it's reasonable.
Yeah, I guess it's possible that what could be going through Brewer's head is that if he bets here, Jorstad has maybe zero raises in his range. Like, if he's not raising a set, he's maybe if he has the nut flush, he's raising. But
maybe not.
But maybe not, you know? He's not just going to have the naked ace of clubs that often, and if he does have it, he's probably not raising it against the under-the-gun range that bet this flop, not too frequently.
And if he does, cool. Oh, but he's not. But the point is why we're checking it.
Right, and so if we check, he's going to bet all of those hands that he's not raising anyway.
Right.
So we get to have this hand in our range along with a lot of other hands that really don't want a lot of money to go in but have showdown value, like over pairs that are two red cards. You know?
Yeah.
And so we get to play those more comfortably along with having flushes in our range that check.
And we're not really getting to protect against the naked ace of clubs anyway, like you're saying, if he's just calling, right? Because
yeah.
if we bet and he calls, if we check, he's probably betting it. We call, it's all the same.
Yeah.
Right? I guess if we bet and he raises, we can maybe get it all in sometimes. We can, you know, we don't really even really want to shut him out, but we want to get more value against it, right? Against the naked ace of clubs.
It's kind of scary if he raises to move in though. Like
you just have to suck it up. You got the second nuts.
Right? Or you could call instead of moving in.
If who raises to move
if
in?
If Jorstad raises.
Yeah.
If we have the king 10 of clubs.
Oh, to move in. I thought you were saying it differently. We wouldn't move in anyway. It's too big.
Yeah.
It'd be too much, right? But we could put in a 3-bet if we wanted, but we're putting the 3-bet to call it off against the ace of clubs or a set. I mean, clearly that's what we'd be doing, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
we would never, ever put in a 3-bet with this hand and fold it, right? That would be absolute manic insanity at this stack depth.
As a quick aside, I think a much better play with Brewer's hand, if it were to go like this,
yeah.
where Brewer bets and Jorstad raises this flop, is to call, and you could just donk shove clean turns.
Interesting. So then you're going to chase away the ace of clubs.
Which is fine with me. I want to clean up the equity when I know that I have all the equity.
But why not check and let him shove into you with the naked ace of clubs and have 80% equity?
Yeah,
actually,
I guess
more.
You could do that.
I mean, it's like, that's how you win tournaments, I think.
Yeah.
Mostly like rather than denying the equity when you're 80-20 and even a little more because there's an extra club.
Fair. I mean, tournament life is just pretty valuable.
Sure.
And, you know, sometimes we can get called by some hands that we have be like sets might decide to call sometimes.
Not too often, probably. Like,
yeah.
Maybe sometimes
but it's not like a terrible result for the ace of clubs or a set to fold, especially a set.
It's true. That's fair. But, you know, it's a better result to get it all in against them once the turn has come out safely.
Yes. Well, then, I don't know. I like waiting to the turn either way.
Okay.
Better, you know.
Fair enough. I think this is cool to do some checking here because we have so many checks. Checking a really strong hand that we're like, cool, do whatever you want, buddy. I ain't going anywhere.
So what do you think about Jorstad now that Brewer has checked? Because he does. He checks 450 in the pot, 8-9 jack. Jorstad has two jacks.
Yeah.
Is this a very obvious bet?
I think it is.
Just because we want to make sure that we get some value out of those overpairs. We want to make sure that we charge the ace of clubs when Brewer is playing the ace of clubs this way.
We want to make sure that, you know, all of the 1.5 million action-killing cards that can come on the turn, we've already got some chips out of Brewer now that we have top set.
Yeah.
And like, are almost always ahead. And even if we aren't, we've got equity against everything. But, like, yeah, we have tens, queens, sevens, and clubs are all, and maybe even board pairing cards are all potentially scary to Brewer's range or Brewer's two red kings, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
We just can't let him get away this easily. I think it's a very clear bet.
What do you think about the sizing? Because Jorstad does bet, but he bets 110 into 450 on an 8-9 jack, all clubs.
It feels like he's trying to induce
yeah.
that. Like, you know, please raise me with your ace of clubs, man.
This is just not the type of board I expect the sizing on.
I would have expected big sizing, not small sizing.
Yeah, like 250 plus.
Yeah, even 300.
Yeah.
On this board, you know? It's interesting that that's not what happens. But I guess one thing that I know with these players, they'll often bet tiny on monochromatic boards, whoever's doing the betting, because they just don't have to bet big. And it gives them more opportunity to have bluffs. But the fold equity is often pretty similar. People just don't want to get involved a lot, you know, if they don't have clear outs against the big stuff. So that must be what it is. It must be just be like a board-based, on monochromatic boards, heads up in these spots. I'm always betting tiny, so it doesn't matter.
What do you think about the idea of checking behind? I'm not advocating for it necessarily, but I think it's very interesting. What do you think about it?
Well, we are allowing any naked club to beat us for free.
Yep.
We're allowing any naked 10, queen, or 7 to beat us for free.
He doesn't have too many naked 7s or 10s.
I mean, he can have pocket 10s. He can have pocket 7s. And he can have ace 10 suited. That's it, right?
Yep.
I guess he could have king 10 suited in another language. But basically, that's it. So there's some stuff we're allowing to beat us for free. And again, there's just a lot of action-killing cards. I mean, you think about all the clubs that are left. There's, what, 3 clubs? There's 10 clubs, and then there's another 9 straightening cards. So that's 19 cards in the deck that are going to come. And if Brewer has the 2 red kings kind of a hand, he's just kind of done with it. He can't put any more money in his pot, no matter what. That's a problem. So I, and also, we love our hand and we're really happy to put a lot of chips in. Like, we hope he raises.
All right.
So I want to put money in.
I want you to exercise your brain here a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Because you just shat all over checking.
Yeah.
Give me some reasons
okay.
that checking could work out. What are some good things about checking?
Okay. Great question. Okay. Well, number one, it's deceptive as hell.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How do you ever put him on top set when he checks? Back.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It seems impossible.
On board pairs, he's not going to think you have a full house, and that's going to be weird when you put in raises and stuff on board pairs.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be weird. There's no question. So there's that. Beyond the deceptive value, what else do we get out of checking? Well, Brewer might be able to catch up. If Brewer has, like, ace-king of hearts here, he might just be checking to fold.
Right, and he can pick up an ace or a king.
Or a straight draw or something mm-hmm. like that, where he feels like he can put chips in the pot on the turn. So we get a chance to make more chips sometimes.
Yeah.
That way, too.
There's got to be metagame value to it.
Checking this hand?
Yeah. Like, you can't really eliminate any hands from my checking range. This seems like the least likely checking hand.
I mean, if these guys are trying to play close to solver perfect anyway, then there's always going to be some balance with all this stuff, right? So there's going to be a little bit of checking almost everything anyway, right? So that's in theory, baked into these guys' games at least a little bit.
Perhaps.
But okay. But still, that would be one of the positives of checking is... I remember Tom Dwan checking back an overpair of queens against Eli Lezra in high-stakes poker, like season whatever. And when they were heads up on the turn, and Gabe Kaplan saying, like, Ellie's never going to put him on an overpair now. And then Ellie, like, bets small on the river. Tom raises, and I think Ellie calls. And it's like, everything goes perfectly. And it's because of the check on the
right.
turn, where I think Ellie's probably check folding a lot. Instead, mm-hmm. he gets all this extra money. So stuff like that can happen. But those feel pretty rare. I mean, with all that said, I still feel like this is a bet almost always.
I do too.
Okay.
It's interesting how small it is, but that's what he does. Your side bets 110. You got a choice now as Brewer. I mean, like, you might have been thinking check call, but now the sizing is so small. Do you lean more towards a raise with your flush?
I would guess that Brewer knows when your side bets he's betting this size with his range.
Perhaps.
So I don't think that's going to mean anything to us. Against an amateur, maybe we'd feel differently. Although with this hand, maybe against an amateur, we probably don't want to raise because they never have it, right?
Yeah.
And they bet this small. Or they have the nuts. Those are the only two things they have here if they bet this small. But your set's probably betting range here at 110K. And so I don't think that means anything to us as Brewer. I think we should just continue with our plan, whatever the plan was as a result. If your set did a weird overbet, maybe we change up our plan. But like you bet like 1.5 times the pot.
And we put him on the ace of clubs more likely or
something? Yeah, or maybe a hand like two pair or a set or something. Hands that are very polarized, but like we're probably in pretty good shape against two.
Probably just sets, right? Probably no two pair in his range.
He might have tiny flushes sometimes if he can have those. I don't know if he can have those.
I don't think he has any of that in his range.
I don't know.
Not based on our preflop analysis.
Yeah. It would have to be like 6-7 of clubs, and I don't know if he can have it, like you're saying. So fair enough. But if he bets like 2 times the pot, I think we could consider raising right now. But that's the kind of like only weird spot where I think we'd want to raise. I think we're calling and just continuing the plan, which, like you said, probably makes more sense to spring on the turn than the flop.
Brewer calls.
Cool.
Pot is 670K. And when I was saying that, I was talking about in the scenario where Brewer bets and Yorstead raises, by the way. So I didn't actually address
the
turn based on the actual scenario.
Fair enough.
Happened. But anyway, 670 in the pot. The turn is the nightmare and a dream, which I guess they're, you know, a nightmare is a type of dream.
It's definitely a type of dream.
It's a dream for Yorstead. It's the Jack of Diamonds. It's a nightmare for Brewer. He knew he didn't want to see a club, but he especially knew he didn't want to see the board pair.
I mean, both seem not great. Everything else is fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the 10 of clubs isn't... we have the 10 of clubs. Don't have to worry about that. Yeah, so it's just board pairing and a club are both bad. And and actually, you're right. The board pair is worse because there's not that many naked ace of clubs out there.
Right. So, also the... the club coming, though, does kill your action probably a little bit more than a board pair when you're still ahead.
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it does.
Either way, Yorstead now has quads. And Brewer still has outs. He's got two outs. But it's a bad spot now.
It's less exciting than it was because, as you said, Yorstead can pretty clearly have eights and nines and clearly can have jacks, too. And we probably know that as Brewer that he can at least have some combos of jacks.
Right. So Brewer's going to check. I mean, he's probably going to check no matter what, but especially on a negative event card like the Jack of Diamonds.
Yeah, he was checking no matter what, I think.
As Yorstead, are you afraid to bet your quads? Is it one of those things where you're like, I don't even know how to play quads when it's top quads? And, you know, it's like so hard to play this hand now. How do I make money? Do you ever have that feeling when you make a hand that's so good and you're like, this feels almost as bad as trying not to fuck up when I have not a good hand and I'm entering a pot, you know? Like,
absolutely. And whenever you put in an aggressive action, you're always like, am I just destroying all value right now? And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, right?
Right.
But yeah, I know that feeling for sure. And so I think Bjørnstad, though, has quads. He's up against an under-the-gun range who didn't fold on the flop, probably has something, must have something, right? And what we really want with this hand, now that we have quads, is to win a monster pot, right? We don't want to win a smallish pot. We're already going to win a smallish pot. We're basically not going to lose. Now, it turns out there are two outs against us, but we're not thinking or worried about that. Like, if he ends up going straight flush against quads, that's just the deal. Like, we're just going to have to live with that.
I mean, we're deep enough, I think, that if the action is such and the four-card straight flush comes in, we might be able to get away from it in some cases.
I am not sure if that's true or not, but we'll examine that. We can examine that later. Let's have this part of the conversation now anyway. I think we should absolutely bet to try and build the pot.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just so scary.
We're going to lose him a lot, and that's okay. If he's got, you know, it's just the deal.
When he has two red kings, he probably just bails, right?
Yep, but I don't know if we were getting much more money out of him anyway.
Yeah.
I guess a king could come on the river.
We're not getting money then.
If a king.
Oh, you mean if the jack comes and the king comes.
So yeah, exactly.
We
have quads, and then we check back and the king, but fine, it's two outs.
Right.
Kings may call anyway. Two black kings are going to call, I think, right?
Probably.
Two red kings are in a weird spot, and I don't know what they do.
Two black kings, I don't know. It's similar to two red kings at this point when the board pairs. It's not ideal.
I mean, I disagree. I mean, like, we're ace-jack suited. Like, we're doing pretty well against that hand in terms of outs, right? Like, those outs are clean. I don't think we're just throwing away two black kings because the board paired.
Maybe not.
That seems like, yeah.
Anyway, yours said bets 450 and a 670.
Yep.
And, Brewer probably obviously doesn't like the card, but knows he can't fold.
Our hand is way too good. Yep. Way too good.
And of course, we have outs whenever we're behind.
Yeah. But this feels like a very clear, like, yeah, sure. Sometimes I'm losing now. It's not ideal, but I'm winning a lot. I'm certainly winning more than enough to put chips in and probably to call out of river bets too. Suckers.
Anyway, you're said bets. Brewer calls.
Okay.
1.63 million in the pot.
Sure.
River's the five of diamonds.
Brickety brick brick. Brickatola.
Eight of clubs, nine of clubs, jack of clubs. Then there's the old jack of diamonds, and then the five of diamonds.
What's the next card going to be, like the four of diamonds?
Probably. Brewer has the second nut flush. Bjørnstad has quads.
Yeah.
Brewer checks.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, I guess you could do like a blocker bet if Bjørnstad was an amateur.
You could.
I feel like you're not supposed to do that against a good player in this spot.
If your set has three jacks, he's going to bet anyway, right? Like if we just go check, call, he's going to be like, red kings, let's price in such a way to get red kings to call.
Yeah. Right?
Like, let's give him a chance to bet that. And rather than run away with the ace of clubs. And maybe he'll lose his mind with the ace of clubs, although I don't know if he will on the paired board. But I think we're definitely checking. Like, even if the board wasn't paired, we're probably checking. Certainly with the paired board, we're checking, right?
Something you said there made me wonder if Bjørnstad makes a mistake here.
Oh, cool.
It's Brewer checks.
Yeah, I know.
Bjørnstad moves in.
Yeah, it doesn't look like he's trying to get two red kings to call.
No,
that,
it does not.
Now, it may look like he's trying to get two red kings to fold, but it sure doesn't look like he's trying to get two red kings to call.
With the ace of clubs, I guess. That's his remaining bluff.
Right. What other bluffs does Bjørnstad have here? Could he ever have king, queen suited and thinks he's blocking king, jack, and queen, jack?
No, that's pretty ambitious.
Brewer opened under the gun. There's not too many combos that you're blocking there, if any. So that isn't a bluff. What other bluffs can he ever have? Can he have, from his point of view, can he have two tens with the ten of clubs in his hand? And he's like trying to get, that's a way to try and get two kings to fold.
Where
he's like, bet, I'm betting again, because sometimes I get you to fold. Sometimes I build a pot when I get there. Whatever, I also set up some jams. I keep all my options open, as Sean Winter would say, think, or we would say about him.
We would say that about Sean Winter.
He wouldn't say it. I mean, he might say it. He's probably said those words. Anyway, so, okay, maybe two black tens sometimes.
Anything with the ten of clubs.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. So there's that, and maybe the naked ace of clubs might decide to pull the trigger.
Might, yeah.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
That we can think of. Unless, does he ever have a smaller pair and somehow went bet with a club in his hand?
I wonder if your set just can't bet this big. Like, this is just a mistake from a holistic range perspective, because, yeah, if you're thinking, like, I want to be able to get called by two red kings, I have ace jack of hearts here, like, you would never go 1.7 million, would you?
I got to tell you, even as you're saying this, I really agree with you on a deep level. This feels like he should be tiny betting here and doing a bunch of things all at once, right? He should bet like 200,000. Let Brewer raise with his value, where Brewer's like, I cannot just allow this to go for 200,000.
Yeah.
So if Brewer has the hand he has, he might raise with King 10 of clubs for 200, if it's 200,000. Yeah. Brewer might bluff sometimes. If he I don't know what bluffs Brewer really has, but he might turn a hand into a bluff that felt comfortable calling and hoping for check, but now thinks it's losing.
Yeah.
Maybe. You might get value out of the two red kings that you couldn't get at other amounts, right?
Two black tens with a 10 of clubs is the type of hand that Brewer might have that he might turn to a bluff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We get to call that. There's a lot of good things that happen at 200K, and almost none of those things happen at 1.7 million, which is a little over pot, which is what he does, right? So, yeah, I agree with you now that you say that. I think super small bet, almost like blocking, trying to get the littlest squeezing of value out of these other hands. And once in a while, maybe Brewer finds just a call with the King 10 of clubs if we bet 200K. And we're like, oh, man, we blew it on that one. But most of Brewer's range is not big hands like this, right? If he's got a full house, he's probably going to move in if we bet 200K. If he has the nut flush, he's probably going to move in. And even this hand, he'll have to at least consider raising, right?
I don't think he's going to move in if we bet 200K with the nut flush.
You don't think so? What do you think he's going to do?
I think he might raise, but I don't think he's going to move in.
I mean, isn't it effectively all the same? He's going to make it a million and fold for 600K more?
Are you kidding? Of course.
I mean, you say, of course, like it's the most obvious thing.
Like you would, okay, let's play it out.
Okay, I already know where you're going.
Yeah,
with this, and so we can just skip to the end.
All right.
Yeah, of course, you're obviously beat when the guy three bets all in after you make it a million.
So why did you act like that wasn't the case?
Because I didn't think it all the way through.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think I like the 200K idea. I think it's also okay to go just a little bit more in the realm of air quotes normal sizing, but not all of it, just because of the scenario.
Like 900,000?
Well, I like the low end of normal, you know, like 550 to 600, something like that. You know?
I mean, Brewer is what's it, but I think he's mostly folding two red kings at 550, 600 is my only concern. Are we supposed to be targeting that hand in hands like that?
We just want to make it look like we are targeting that hand. So, like, as long as we can make it feasible that we could think that we're getting called by that hand, then we can sometimes get called by better hands than that, which think we're targeting a weaker hand than we have.
Yeah.
Right. Which is a very convoluted way to say that.
I just feel like 550 may be too much for it to be feasible for us to be targeting kings. Maybe 300, 350. I don't know. I'm just worried about it being too much at this $200,000 buy-in event final table that Brewer's going to like find some magical fold or something.
I don't think the buy-in matters. Why does the buy-in matter?
You know, I think these guys put more pressure on themselves and it's more intense and maybe you're going to be a little tighter.
Maybe.
At these buy-ins. I think they do that. I think they tighten up, even the good players.
Okay. If you say so. I don't know.
I mean, we just saw a guy fold two kings on 19 blinds, right? Like,
but that wasn't one of the guys who's always winning everything.
True. That's true.
This is. These both are.
I mean, both these guys have won like two things in their lives.
Fine. That's, they're both terrible.
They both have like 15 million in Hendon. I'm saying like it isn't like they've got 60 million.
All right. They're bad at poker. I admit this.
This is a really big final table for them is what I'm saying.
It
this
is.
Would be Chris Brewer's biggest win ever if he wins it. Like this stuff, like he's feeling it most likely.
Sure. So what you do by making it 550 is you let him stay in the tournament. If he calls and loses.
That's true. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I really like that.
Removing him from the tournament is kind of a big deal.
Yes. That is really nice. You like force him to call with hands where he's like, I have to call, but and he can't give himself the excuse if I'd be out, which he can do if we move in like he does. When Jorstad actually moves in now, Brewer's like, this is for everything.
I mean, I can understand from Jorstad's perspective if he's wanting to like play the metagame correctly here. He's like, well, if I were bluffing, I would want to put maximum pressure. And if he's way more likely to fold to an all-in, then I'm supposed to do it with value.
He needs to have some value.
Right. Which, you know, fair enough. So I understand from a balance perspective, if you actually do want to move in with your bluffs, why you would move in with quads here. I'm not sure if you should want to move in with your bluffs here. I'm not sure like if the practical aspects of winning this hand with your bluffs are enough to make your common bet all in here when it's so ineffective when you have value.
Got it. Well, but on the other side of it is it's so effective when you have a bluff, clearly, right? Like,
yeah.
So the bluff, this is the bluff size that works. But your set, we have to balance it with some value.
Your set moves in, and like, unless your set is Rigby, Brewer can't call with the king high flush here, right? Like, how can you call?
It's really hard to put him on ace jack when he moves in. I'll say that.
Yeah,
it's really, really, really hard. Where he'd have to be going for thin max value.
You have to put him on one of the three combos of ace queen off with the ace of clubs.
Pretty much.
He can't have tens with a ten of clubs.
He's not bluffing with a jack in his hand where he's like, I'm blocking the full house. There's no need to do that.
No.
He would bet a normal size. If he has jack 10 suited somehow, right? And he went bet. And now he's like, I have the best hand. I'm betting for value. How can I get called by aces?
Right.
He wouldn't move in.
He would bet
most of the time.
At most 550 or 600, you would think.
Right. Most of the time. That's what you would think.
And sometimes he'd bet like 200, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It feels like maybe for balance it's good. I just don't know how often we're going to actually show up with bluffs here.
Well, I would guess he does show up with bluffs at this number.
Yeah.
A reasonable amount of the time. What bluffs he has. And so he's got to have, you know, some of those. There has to be some value in there too. So he's got to pick what combos are value. So this is apparently one of his value combinations. I mean, that's one way to talk about it, right? That's the GTO way to talk about it.
Yeah.
Then there's the exploitative way to talk about it, where, like you're saying, you're almost never going to get called.
Right.
Especially when we have a jack in our hand. It's even harder. I mean, whatever. Maybe that doesn't matter, because it's either pocket jacks or nothing for Brewer in terms of having a jack in our hand, right?
Well, Brewer ends
jack up suited, I guess.
Brewer ends up folding.
Right.
Which is not a great sign for this as a
play. It's true.
If we can't get the king high flush to call, that's a problem. That means we need him to have a full house, basically, or the nut flush.
And, like, full houses feel unlikely.
Yep.
The nut flush doesn't feel super likely.
No.
Yeah, there aren't very many combos of full houses, that's for sure. Possible, but...
And the nut flush actually might be an easier fold than the king high flush. And you know why.
Yes, I do, because the ace of clubs is no longer available. Yeah. If the whole thing is, let me ask this. Now, your set can't have this from Brewer's point of view, but from your set's point of view, let's say your set had king, queen of clubs.
Okay.
It checks him on the floppy bets, checks him on the tourney bets. Now, the board's paired, but still.
Yeah.
How many full houses are out there that's problematic for him? Not many.
Not right? A ton.
Checks him on the river. It's a pot size shove. The only question we'd ask ourselves, I think we want to bet our king, queen of clubs. The only question is, what number can we bet to get called by these other hands? And this goes back to what you're talking about, right? Where 1.7 doesn't feel like it's going to get called enough that we're going to do so much better at 600,000.
If we have king, queen of clubs, then Brewer literally has zero flushes in his range that we're beating.
Correct.
So
now we're trying to get called by like ace, jack suited.
Yeah.
Or two queens.
Right. And all in is too much for those hands.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, I think this might be a mistake.
I will say, we are talking about this from a... Like, sometimes the all-in works well at this level. Because, Adamo's done this very, very well. He'll bet three times the pot on the river and get called by bottom two pair a lot, right? Part of it is because of his rep, but part of it is because he's normalized these sizings a little bit, on like river sizings for him. And they're like, he's just super polarized, and I have to figure out what hands I am and I'm not calling with, and I can't, you know, I can't just fold because I only have two pair here, bottom two.
Well, I think a piece of the Adamo magic is also understanding which spots to do that in. Like, it's not like ubiquitous. Every hand that he's in where he has a good hand that he's doing that, right? That's just sometimes.
He does it a surprising amount, I will say that. A surprisingly large amount of the time from what I've watched him.
Sure. I'm just not sure that this is a spot that he would do it.
Maybe not.
I don't feel like it's a great spot for it overall.
Yeah. This probably plays better as an all-in with like pocket nines, right? Because now ace-jack can call us and block stuff. At least.
Ace-jack is probably not calling an all-in.
Well, it blocks the full houses, which is why it would consider it. Although there are no full houses to block. I take it back with that. You just block a set of jacks.
Yeah.
That's all you block. Never mind. We're not deep enough for people to have these other hands.
I think it's too much.
It feels like it's too much.
I understand, like...
He's just going for balance.
Yeah, he's going for balance, and also, if I were there in the moment playing the hand, I'd be like, oh, we've set up a pot-sized river shove. That feels very natural to me, you know? And I understand that, for sure.
I mean, I would assume as your set is moving in, he's like, Brewer rarely calls here, you know? Yeah. But I want to make sure I capture value from all the hands that have to call. Capture full value. Again, if we bet 300,000, Brewer has pocket eights, he's probably going to raise anyway, right? Yeah. We probably get it all no matter what. So the full houses probably give it to us anyway, no matter how we play it.
Maybe not all of it, but at least a chunk.
It's going to be really hard for pocket eights or pocket nines are never folding, right? Like,
oh, if we, yeah.
Pocket 100% of the time, pocket
eights,
nines are getting...
Eights might fold. If we...
I would guess we put in too much as eights to
really,
really find
the fold. It's not
really
different than the nut flush.
It's a little different. It's a little different. Anyway, let's not... Again, fine. We could have that very light debate, but let's not.
Okay,
right?
We won't.
We've done it before. We'll do it again.
I'm sure we will.
I keep coming back to this, like, I think I just like the small sizing to, like, where I think we capture value against the better... The hands that are always calling us anyway. We capture most, if not all, of the value, and we also get value against some of the worst hands, and maybe once in a while we induce something weird. Unlikely, right. But once in a while.
I like that. And it's not beholden to sizing conventions, which is kind of the magic that Adamo has brought to poker, right? Yeah. Where, like, he's often using big sizing, but sometimes very small sizing. Actually, Sean Winter is more known for the small sizing.
Yes, oh my God.
But these are two guys who are, like, challenging the convention surrounding sizing, and we're so obsessed with pot size, and maybe not enough with stack size and SPR. Mm. And maybe we should be using those more to let us know how much to size in river spots in particular. Mm-hmm. And a tiny sizing here feels like it just works. It just feels weird because we're used to using the pot size as a way to indicate how much we should bet. But I think tiny sizing is better.
I also feel like, and it's something I think we have talked about before, but it's been a while, that at these highest levels, river sizing, we will see sometimes commentators talk about even how, like, the river sizing really indicates which section of the range they're betting.
Yeah.
And I sort of, now obviously there's going to be some balance within that too, but it feels like there isn't enough based on the way the commentators and even the players themselves seem to react to different river sizes.
Yeah.
Like where someone bets small on the river and you've got a good enough hand, you just have to raise now, you know, even though, and you're falling into the trap sometimes, you know? And so I feel like fucking with those dials is a good thing against this kind of competition, especially.
I agree. Anyway, it's a good fold by Brewer, despite, yeah, like, you know.
It's a great fold by Brewer.
It is. It's really tough to fold that hand.
Absolutely.
But he does it. How does this thing end up?
Oh, I'm super glad you asked. I'm going to tell you right now. Brewer finishes seventh, so he has been crippled a little bit, I guess, $770,000. And Yorstead finishes third for $2.766 million. Nacho Barbero finishes second. I know you love that guy. Timothy Adams finishes fourth. And an unknown player finishes first. I don't know who it is because I'm not looking at the video. Just the Hendon.
Okay.
There it is. Hey. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second dates. I'm the rapper most likely.